I and mine. I'll give you a little background of what was the inspiration for this. It's a nice story. When I was 20 years old, I met Krishna devotees. And I'll skip a lot of details, but I ended up visiting and then moving into and then becoming an ashram resident of the Boston Temple in the summer of 1970. 20 years old. And during the course of that summer, there was a lot of new devotees joined the temple full time, just as I did. And one of them, one of the pair of the persons that joined, was a married couple. And we had each other's association when we were young devotees, and then by Krishna's fine arrangement, I was traded from the Boston Temple to the New York Temple. Yeah, what can you do? Prabhupada wanted to have a printing press, as Bhaktisiddhanta, his Guru Maharaj, had many printing presses. So Prabhupada was, the movement was just getting started. Prabhupada wanted, rather than paying printers to print, he wanted that we would have our own printing press. And they tried getting, you know, a nice kind of mechanically inclined devotee to run the printing press, but it's too complicated. So there was another devotee in New York who commercially had run a printing press, so they wanted him to come from New York to Boston. But the New York devotee said, well, you have to send somebody from Boston to New York, and that was me. So since that time, the summer of 1970, I hadn't seen this devotee couple for a long time. I mean, too long. I had, because his wife, they became pujaris in the Calcutta temple after some time, and then lived for some time in Mayapur, and then lived for some time in Vrindavan. Maybe some of you here, Matajis especially, might know Narayani. Narayani Mataji, Prabhupada disciple. She's very scholarly. She teaches at the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. She conducts seminars. She's a star. She's really something special. And so is her husband. He has rendered something like Amala Bhakta has visited here, right? Amala Bhakta is a narrator. Before he was a devotee, he was a professional radio narrator. So he just used that skill, and now he's narrated the whole of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, Ramayana. He has it all recorded in a fantastic, with different voices. He's got a whole cabinet full of 64 different voices. So, you know, one of my favorites is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through Jharkhand forest, and he gets all the forest animals to chant. So he imitates the elephants chanting and the tigers chanting, Hare Krishna! It's really good. I can't do it. He can do it. So as he did the voice narration, so this devotee that I joined with, he did a summary of the entire, there's some on a level that kids can follow. You know, and big kids too, but you know, little kids can follow, but it's simple. a summary of the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire Ramayana, and, you know, a nice little book. And then I saw this devotee about a year and a half ago. We saw him in Mayapur, and we hadn't seen each other for 41 years. But I knew of him, and he knew of me, and we were walking along a hallway. I was heading to Prasadam for lunch at our GBC meeting. And I said, "Hari Bol!" And he said, "Do you recognize me?" I said, "Of course I recognize you. We did devotional service together for several months at the Boston Temple. And I'm surprised you remember me." I said, "Come on, let's go take Prasadam." And I would ask him, "How's it going? What's your latest writing? What's the next epic that you're going to make a summary study of?" You know, to make a summary study, you got to know what the epic says to make it presentable. He's also, like his wife, very formidable, very bright. And he's a communicator. He doesn't just know stuff and keep it to himself. He communicates it. So he said, I've written so many books. Now what I want to do is teach. And then he started getting really animated, really excited, and said, "What I'd like to do, I have this package of presenting Krishna consciousness in such a way that anybody can understand it. Because if you don't understand," he said, "it's like it takes 2 months, but he's teaching this, you know, the real identity of the self as a soul, and the real understanding of, based upon the word spirit soul, what we can consider mind. I am mind." He said, the presentation is so cogent, so clear, so compact, so, I've been meditating on it for 40 years. And so it's really refined, and I'm convinced that give me any audience, put me in front of any audience, give me 2 months, and they'll become devotees, because this is so foundational. If you don't get the foundation, how can you go further? He was like really excited. I thought, wow. After all of this scholarship, Mahabharata, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, and other writings, he wants to talk about I am mine. His conviction is, when people can clearly understand that, then they can make spiritual progress. And if they don't understand that, how are you going to make spiritual progress? You can become pious, but spiritual progress is more than piety. So, that inspired this presentation. And, you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Trying, okay. So this is one of many verses that expresses what the importance of I and mine is. In Sanskrit, it's aham and mama. And you put them together as aham mameti, I and mine, as thus I am mine. So it's aham mameti. It's describing material consciousness. To have material consciousness, you have to have a material conception of I, and flowing from that material conception of mine. So, here's the quote from the second canto, ninth chapter. This second canto, ninth chapter, is the chapter where the Chaturshloki verses, the four essential verses that express the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, are in that chapter. And this is one of the leading verses of that chapter, introducing this important subject. I and mine, the illusion, living entity, appears in so many forms offered by the external energy of the Lord. While enjoying in the modes of material nature, the encaged living entity misconceives thinking in terms of I and mine. So I'm going to start with the I conception and use the analogy of an iceberg. Commonly when we speak in conversation, we say something like, ah, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Meaning, below the tip of the iceberg, there's so much more. So here's the tip of the iceberg, the physical conception of I, where people identify I in terms of the body, or the bodily behaviors, or bodily actions, and that's me. I'm a carpenter. I'm a physician. I'm a teacher. I'm a housewife. I'm a whatever the body and what the body does. That's who I am. And not only it gives identification to who I think I am, but then judgments, you can say value judgments, are made based upon the body or the behaviors of the body. This is a very superficial view of who a person is. Just like the tip of the iceberg is a very superficial view of what an iceberg is. So go below the tip of the iceberg. Now we're going down. And below the surface of the water, there's a huge piece of ice. And like with the iceberg, the mental conception of I, where people think about themselves in terms of their feelings. I'm the kind of person who fill in the blank. That's the mental conception. When people speak like this to me, I get really angry. I'm the kind of person who, whatever it is, we identify in terms of thinking, feeling, and willing. Thoughts, that's the functions of the mind, of these three. Thinking, feeling, and willing. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes, while contemplating the object of the senses, one develops some attachment for them. That's a feeling. Thinking, that's the contemplating, feeling, and then the willing. I want, or I don't want, I don't like. And then comes an action. So below the actions, there's the mind prompting the action. There's so many ways to describe that or illustrate that. And so some people identify on that platform. But that's also a very shallow image or conception of personality. So go a little deeper, and that's the intellectual conception. And in the intellect, this is where we hold values. I was discussing that with one family today about education of children or parenting, that the most important part is not making sure that your children have a lot of information in their information basket, but that they have character, they have values, because values are going to drive feelings, are going to drive actions. So if you can instill, if you're a parent and you can instill values in your dependent children, that's the best education. And values are gathered intellectually. So that's a deeper view of personality than just behaviors and feelings. But it's still incomplete. Here's the whole conception or holistic conception. Belief beneath intelligence, mind, and body, there's the soul or unseen self. It's who we ultimately really are. Because the material energy awards us a body and a mind and intelligence, and that's always changing in this lifetime and from lifetime to lifetime, according to the modes of nature and our past karma. But aside from that, there's the real self, the animating aspect of life, the soul. And people who identify as spiritual beings, as spirit souls, They also know they have an intelligence and a mind and actions. But so their conception is complete. That's the spiritual conception of I. As spirit soul, I am awarded by nature these other faculties, and I'm utilizing these faculties in service. And if I can see on that spiritual platform myself and others, then there's a chance for equal vision. Pandita Samadarshana. You know that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Vidya Vinaya Sampani Brahmani Gavi Haistani Chuni Chaiva Sopake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. Samadarshana. Equal vision. Samadarshana. One can treat others equally. Samadarshana. If I can see on the spiritual platform. Now, seeing on the spiritual platform, Prabhupada gave this nice example. Supposing there's a pundit who has samadarshan, he can see equally. The behaviors towards those who he sees equally may be different. Prabhupada gave the example. If he sees a tiger, he doesn't go and embrace the tiger. If he sees his son, he embraces his son, but he doesn't go and embrace the tiger. The behavior towards the tiger is appropriate. The behavior towards the son is appropriate. This distinctions of behavior may be there, even when is a samadarshi, an equal vision seer. But still, the regard of respect towards all is equal. Respect goes to the soul when you have spiritual vision. The Titanic has been occupying a lot of news because of its 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. And what happened, so the story goes, was the ocean liner that was crossing from England to the United States, the first ocean crossing, this big, beautiful, super deluxe Titanic. As they were passing an iceberg, they didn't calculate the lower part of the iceberg. They just calculated the tip. And they crashed, the bow of the ship crashed into the stuff that was below, because they had this myopic view of what that's the iceberg, it's just the tip. So a lot of people lost their lives. Well, some other people made a movie of it, made a million. But the misfortune is when we don't recognize the whole person. So we try to have relationships between person A and person B, or groups of persons, groups A and groups B. But if we don't recognize the nature of the whole person, we just see the behaviors, maybe, or maybe the mind, but we don't see the whole person, then we're going to have conflicts. Unnecessary conflicts. It just arises naturally. I'm going to share something probably some of you have heard before, but some of you haven't. The very first lecture that I heard Srila Prabhupada give as a college student was on this topic. With his hands, Prabhupada went like this. And said, imagine that there's a pond of water in the middle here. And we give everybody in the room a little stone pebble and say to somebody, can you please place your stone in the middle of the pond and let's see what happens. And so what happens? A little splash and concentric circles expand out and it's very nice. Okay, now someone else, you put your stone in the middle of the pond, and it's not exactly in the same place, it's like that. And it's the same thing, and it's all very nice until the concentric circles intersect with the other concentric circles, and then you have a clash. And then, okay, everybody on the count of three, throw your stone into the pond, and what's going to happen? It's chaos. And that's called material life. Where I'm the center, no, I'm the center, no, I'm the center, no, I'm the center. And there's conflict. So it's unavoidable. We have that kind of a situation instead of what Prabhupada describes. Then, supposing we just take one center and everyone places their stone in that one place, what happens? And what happens is the concentric circles amplify the other concentric circles. And there's no clash. And Prabhupada explained, that's God-centered life. We maintain our individuality. And we respect another person's individuality, but we repose that individuality upon Krishna. And that's God-centered life. God-centered individual life, God-centered interpersonal life, God-centered society, community, nation, etc. God-centered life. So that's the spiritual conception, briefly, of I. And then, flowing from I comes mine. So, if I place my full individuality on the root of all existence, then my individuality not only benefits me, but benefits all others, because Krishna is the root of all existence. We repose our tendencies, our individuality, our capacity, our service there. Everyone benefits. Now that flows into the my conception. There's physical, mental, and intellectual, and spiritual. Here's the physical conception. Fighting like cats and dogs. The classic. You like that picture? Okay. Are you on the cat side or the dog side? That's the question. All right. If I think of myself in terms of the physical I, then what's mine is my group. It's like this or like that, depending upon where I identify I, that becomes mine, my group. But if there's my group, then I get attachment to my group and I get aversion to another group on the physical platform. And this promotes dissension between one group of people that identify in terms of my nation or my religion or my race or my culture, my flag, my country, tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, and then, you know, anyone that crosses my land, you better watch out, because you're a different group. That's on the physical plane. Here's a scriptural quote that addresses, this is from a purport. It's from Kapila Dev's teachings, It's from Uddhava Gita, Krishna's teaching to Uddhava in the 11th canto. One who remains attached to the bodily concept of family and friends cannot possibly give up the false egoism of I and mine, or I am everything, and everything is mine. I and mine, on the physical plane. Here's another quote from the 7th canto. This man looks a little upset. In the conditioned stage, one's conceptions of life are sometimes polluted by passion and ignorance, which are exhibited by attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, false prestige, insults, fault finding, deception, envy, intolerance, passion, bewilderment, hunger, and sleep, etc. It's a long list. All of these are enemies. Sometimes one's conceptions are also polluted by goodness. 7th canto Bhagavatam. So I am mine. On the mind platform, this is where emotions, thinking, feeling, willing takes place. It leads to these wrong conceptions of mind based upon the wrong conceptions of I. Mental conception leads to attachment and aversion on the mental platform. Again, contemplating the object of the senses, that's the thinking, and then feelings, and then willings, and then comes actions. So such individuals are driven by their feelings and emotions and sentiments. And because there are other persons that have clashing emotions and feelings and sentiments, we have disturbances in our interpersonal relationships. Here's from the fifth canto, Rishabhdev's teachings. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. And from Bhagavad Gita, the living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus, he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. So following the physical and mental is the intellectual conception of life. That sounds nice, intellectual my conception. That's where, as we mentioned, where values are held. But if I have my values and someone doesn't share the same values, I can have an intellectual clash with another personality or group of persons. So on the intellectual platform, there's attachment and aversion. And we can't avoid it because we have minds and we have intelligences and we have bodies. So the I and mine on the physical, mental, and intellectual platform leads to conflict. So far better is the spiritual conception of my or mine. This is an illustration of a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Looks like Prabhupada with his cane, but maybe it's just a sadhu. And he's, the scene is, here's this dying person and a group of people who are surrounding the dying person lamenting the loss of their dear friend. But the saintly person is seeing the spirit soul. They're certainly seeing the bodies that are gathered together. But on the ultimate platform, there's spirit soul. And when you are seeing on the platform of spirit soul, the attachment and aversion or sense of misidentification, and with that, proprietorship and enjoyership, you become free from all of that. And in addition to seeing oneself properly, one can see others properly. And seeing then becomes in relation to the supreme soul, not just the individual soul. Here's a verse from the seventh canto of Bhagavatam that discusses this. And I'm almost done, so be ready for an abrupt ending. It's coming right up. With these transcendental qualities, one who is actually learned must give up the illusory conception of life in which one thinks, I am this material body, and everything in relationship with this body is mine. That's the spiritual conception. Letting go of the material conception and embracing the spiritual conception. So again, it's watering the root of the tree. The tree of life belongs to the proprietor, Krishna, the source of the tree of life. So we give our energy, I and mind conceptions unto Krishna, and the tree of life, ourselves included, flourish and benefit. Here is a verse just after the one that I quoted at the beginning. Remember that one? The I and mind verse at the beginning of this presentation. Very next verse. As soon as a living entity becomes situated in his constitutional glory and begins to enjoy the transcendence beyond time and material energy, he at once gives up the two misconceptions of life, I and mind, and thus becomes fully manifested as the pure self. This is what is being advocated in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the spiritual conception that allows one to let go of the material conception. How do you do it in reverse? How do you let go of the material conception? Here's a very simple example. Unique example. Prabhupada was describing, supposing you have a glass and it's filled with ink and you want milk, but you can't take the milk in the glass as long as it's filled with ink. So you empty out the ink, but you put the ink back in an inky atmosphere, it's going to again fill up with ink. And you can't then fill it up with milk because it gets, can't mix the two. Now, I've thought about that so many times. Where's an inky atmosphere? But he's making up the point. If the atmosphere is contaminated, you want to get rid of contamination, but you put it back in a contaminated atmosphere, what's going to happen? The conceptions are going to again be contaminated conceptions. So, then he said, instead, if you empty the milk and empty the ink and fill it up with milk, there's no room for ink. Even put it in an inky atmosphere. That is to say, if you can fill yourself with a spiritual conception, genuinely embrace, or shrinvanti, gayanti, grinanti, sadavaha, you hear and you repeat and you bring it to your heart, actually imbibe a spiritual conception and move with that, work with that, act accordingly. Try to act accordingly. You strive, you cultivate by proper process of bhakti. You try to cultivate. Then at once the misconceptions of I and mine are dissipated and the spiritual conception takes its place. So here's our next to last slide. This is the spiritual conception message. The true self, or I, gives rise to spiritual activities. And that's Radha Govinda. To take you to Krishna. This is the deity that I worship in New York, a picture of Radha Govinda. The spiritual conception leads to spiritual activities, leads you to the spiritual destination. 1, 2, 3. Just by proper cultivation. Same as this, the devotee that I was mentioning. So much advanced philosophy or in spiritual teachings can't take you where you want to go if you hold on to the material conception of life. I'll end with this. You've heard of the wedding party story? During, Prabhupada told this story. This is also in the very first Back to Godhead magazine that I received. It was a Bhaktisiddhanta article, and then there was a little kind of cartoon illustration of the wedding party. The Prabhupada told us that when he was a householder, he went to Vrindavan at a time when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was conducting a one-month pilgrimage of Braj Mandala. And every evening they would sit and have katha. The Prabhupada would attend the katha. And during one of those evening sessions, somebody asked Bhaktisiddhanta, why is it that we see that some people seem to strive very hard to progress in spiritual life, but they're not making much progress? It's apparent they're trying hard, but it's also apparent they're not making much progress. Why is that? And Bhaktisiddhanta told the wedding party story. It fits completely into this topic. So, once upon a time, there was a wedding, and this was in India, and the family of the groom, the man to be married, the tradition was, still is in many cases, they would go to the place where the girl lived, and the marriage would take place the next morning. So they got in a boat and asked the boatman, take us to such and such place. Oh, it's a wonderful occasion, the wedding of our son to this wonderful girl, and we're looking forward, and they're describing in a very happy, festive way. And they took rest in the boat. And the boatman was rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing. And they woke up in the morning, the sun had come up. Oh, happy day, the wedding of our son to this wonderful girl, and they looked around and they were in the same place. And they started getting very anxious and said, boatman, what have you done? The wedding is this morning and we're still in the same place. And he said, no, I was rowing all night. I know the way, and I was rowing and rowing. And I said, well, what happened? And they looked and he forgot to pull the anchor. He was rowing all night long. He was doing his job, but he forgot to pull the anchor. So Bhaktisiddhanta said, similarly, one can take up spiritual activity, but if they don't let go of the material conception of life and their attachments that go along with the material conception of life, the I and mine conception on the material plane, they're not going to make much progress. Like the boatman has to pull his anchor in addition to rowing. And it was downstream too, we just didn't go anywhere. So this is very important, the teaching that's found in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. We all know what it says, but it's important that we understand it so deeply that we live our lives accordingly. We're not this body. And since we're not this body, those things that we ordinarily think of as mine are also not mine, connected to the bodily conception or the mental conception, my thoughts and my feelings or my values. The spiritual conception has to displace the material conception. Then we can begin to make nice spiritual progress. Cultivate that understanding and the application of it very carefully. One of the nice ways to do that, those of you that are visitors here, there's a very nice program connected with the temple or conducted by the leading some of the experienced devotees in the temple to train our members who come, not just come and see the deity and take prasadam and enjoy the arti, but get systematic training in the message of Bhagavad Gita. So I'm sure there's literature at the table and devotees can explain to you. Just ask. And there's programs, not just have a little presentation on a Sunday and then come back next Sunday, but systematically in your homes, with some guidance, learn these messages and how to apply these messages. Systematic training in the message of Bhagavad Gita. And the self-realization course. Very nice. Very practical. And from the spiritual conception comes spiritual activity. And from the spiritual activity comes entrance to the spiritual world. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.